This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bites. It is Wednesday, the 27th of October. My name is Audrey Raj and joining me in the studio is the lovely Frida Liu.
Hello.
So on the show today, we are going to be talking about fishing and vishing.
Yeah, we learned a new word today. The question we're asking over on Twitter is, have you or anyone you know been a victim of an online scam? Yes, there are options on Twitter. Yes, I have. Yes, someone I know has. No, but almost was. No, I haven't. So yes, let us know via Twitter. Instagram, still not up and running. So we've been part of an online scam. On WhatsApp, 018-789-8899.
Yeah, and also give us the details about these
I've
scams,
got stories.
Right? Okay.
Later.
Yeah, that's quite the tease, right? We'll wait to hear Frida's stories. But we are talking about this because, you know, it's sometimes easy to think phishing or vishing scams only work on people who aren't very savvy online. You know, namely, there's a sense that Generation Z, people who are born after 1997 or so, and millennials, those who were born from 81 to 96, have good enough cyber awareness to avoid these online tricks. But social engineering scammers are apparently finding success with these groups now. The number of online scam victims aged 20 and younger has increased more than 150% between 2017 and 2020. And this is according to Social Catfish's The State of Internet Scams 2021 report.
It seems to be something that we're hearing more and more of here in Malaysia as well. We hear about an unfortunate individual who has fallen prey to some kind of online scam, whether it's a businessman up in Kelantan that lost 191,000 in a crypto scam, or a salesman over in Sarawak that lost 54,000 ringgit on an investment scam just a couple of weeks ago. So most of the stories that we read about tend to be about people from a certain generation of a certain age. But that looks as though it's changing. Over in the US, for example, the number of scam victims under 20 years old increased from 9,000 plus in 2017 to more than 23,000 3 years later.
Yeah, so you know, and I like that part. But now, how it's just—it's no longer the Nigerian prince that you have to look out for. You know, there's just—they're getting just far more sophisticated and advanced. Young people actually registered the greatest increase among all other groups across the reporting period under this report. Now, the over 60 age group increased 112% from about 49,000 to 105,000, for instance. And in the 40 to 49 age group, the volume of scam victims grew 104% from 44,000 to 91,000. Now, supporting this finding, Social Catfish also interviewed an editor who surveyed 700 US adults, and their study revealed that individuals aged 18 to 29 took a dubious first prize as victims of identity theft at 15%. By comparison, the rate for people over 45 stood more firm at just 8%. So, why are young people falling for these scams?
Well, certainly part of the puzzle is that young people embrace a culture where they can share. So however, other reasons are factored into why they fall for online scams as well. So back in 2016, Consumer Reports shared the results of a survey from the Better Business Bureau, BBB, in which many scam victims tended to be young and well-educated. The study attributed this finding to the fact that young people tended to suffer from optimism bias, a way of thinking that makes them feel invulnerable and causes them not to take safety precautions. In particular, people 18 to 34 were more likely to be taken by false offers of employment. This finding challenges the distorted lens of seeing scam victims as unintelligent, old and gullible, as noted by the BBB, because they're smart.
And in 2019, the Federal Trade Commission reported that millennials were, and I quote, more likely to report losing money to fraud than people 40 and over generally, and much more likely to report a loss on certain types of fraud. No, but this gets worse. How many times a day do you see an SMS OTP or a mobile authenticator app? Now, unfortunately, SMS OTPs have been proven to be insecure, being vulnerable to interception and phishing attacks. Mobile authenticators are seen as the safest and most convenient option, with many keeping the cryptographic keys used to generate OTP codes protected by specialized hardware built into phones. And these are called the Trusted Execution Environment, or TEE. So even these are not safe.
Right. However, safest doesn't necessarily mean perfect. And new research into a previously overlooked design flaw reinforces this all too well. Most distressingly, if the authenticator itself cannot be trusted, then it opens the digital service to manipulation by malware or reverse engineered by bad actors, potentially leading to account takeovers, data leakage, fraud, or worse.
Yeah. So Singapore-based VKey, a software-based digital security company that developed the world's first virtual secure element, they recently released a white paper demonstrating how most mobile authentication apps can, in fact, be breached by malware. This is regardless of any hardware-based protection provided by your phone. And we will have the chief technology officer of VKey, Chiang Kai, on the phone with us after the break to kind of explain to us how vulnerable we actually are and what we might be able to do about it. But like, I actually wanted to talk about this interview that Richard did with this guy from Fido Alliance. His name escapes me right now. But it was a really good interview about the future of passwords. Will we even be using passwords in the future, right? Mm. And in that discussion, they actually talked about these OTPs and how anything that is sent to you can be intercepted midway by someone who is on the other side of the globe.
Right.
You know, it's so easy. So what you need to start thinking about is moving away from secret-based passwords to
biometrics,
possession-based identification. So it's like biometrics or facial recognition. That's the stuff that is only with you.
Right.
You know, and that would be a safer option than having someone from, I don't know, the other side of the globe send you a secret, which is like a 6-digit code, you know, on your phone for you to actually access your secure information online.
Right.
And they even brought up the fact that the 4-digit code that you use to, you know, punch in to withdraw money at an ATM, even that is more secure than the OTP that is sent to your
phone.
Right. Okay. Imagine that.
And no, with this whole thing about possession owned and, you know, biometrics and all that, right? You know, I've watched too many movies. They can cut off your finger.
Oh, yeah. Okay, on the show today, we are asking you if you or anyone you know have been a victim of an online scam. Whether it's phishing or it's vishing, get in touch with us and give us the details. 018-789-8899 is the number to reach us on WhatsApp. You can also chime in on Twitter. At BFM Radio is our handle. When we come back, we will have the CTO of VKey, Chiang Kai, on the phone with us to talk to us about just how vulnerable we are online. All that and more happening on Enterprise Biz by to BFM 89.9.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with Frida Liu and Audrey Raj. On the show today, we are asking you about your horror online scam stories.
Right. Have you or anyone you know been a victim of an online scam? Looking at the Twitter poll, yes, someone I know has a 31.6%. Yes, I have a 25%, so that's more than half. No, but almost was 25%. No, I haven't, 18.4%. You lucky lot.
So only 18% are saved.
Yeah.
You know, have not had any knowledge or which is kind of scary, isn't it? You know, that means like more than 80% of all our respondents have had some touch point with an online scam.
Have you in any way?
Yes, I have. But you know, we'll save the story for a little later, because waiting patiently for us on the phone right now is the CTO of VKey, Chiang Kai, a software-based digital security company based in Singapore, whose research team uncovered a very troubling design flaw in most mobile authentication apps, the kind that banks, financial services and governments here in Malaysia and elsewhere, of course, use. Now, Chiang Kai, thanks for joining us on the line today. We've got to say that we're a little worried about this whole thing. So how did VKey's research team uncover this design flaw in these mobile authentication apps, you know, used by some of the large corporations that we know?
As a mobile security company, our security research team actively looks for mobile-related security vulnerabilities on an ongoing basis. In this case, we were looking at how our technology can complement the security of Keystone and Keychain, which are provided by Google and Apple respectively in Android and iOS. We were indeed very surprised by what we discovered, as we did not have to reverse engineer any of the apps. All we did was looking into how a malware app may be able to access the Keystone and Keychain entries of an authentication app. And we discovered that it's possible, even if hardware-based protection is used, such as the secure enclave in iPhones.
Right. What is this flaw? Does it vary on the various mobile authentication apps?
Most authentication apps use cryptographic keys to generate the codes used for user identification. Mm-hmm. These apps can be likened to a treasure chest, which only these keys can open. If these keys are stolen, a hacker would be able to authenticate transactions or sign documents on the user's behalf. This is why most authentication apps try to make use of the safer storage available for these keys. For many software developers, this means the use of KeyStore and KeyChain on Android and iOS respectively. We have discovered that malware can be used to get to the authentication app's keys, enabling the hacker to make unauthorized transactions or sign bogus documents. This is especially true for jailbroken phones, rooted devices, or models susceptible to what is known as a privilege escalation vulnerability. We call this design flaw the trust gap, because the secure enclave can be misguided to trust that the malware app is authorized to access another app's secrets. As a real-life example, now imagine someone using a mobile authentication app to generate OTPs for 2FA or sign digital documents. One day, they see an interesting mobile gaming app. They decide to download, install, and try it out. What the user doesn't know is that this gaming app is actually malware that exploits a privilege escalation vulnerability and the trust gap flaw to target their mobile authentication app. The result is that the malware gets access to the user's authentication keys, thereby allowing the hacker controlling the malware to log in to the user's account and perform unauthorized actions. As the attack targets the underlying security components that most apps make use of, it works consistently across all the popular authentication apps we examined.
You know, this is a serious business. Has this flaw already been discovered and infiltrated by hackers?
We have not seen reports of similar attacks so far, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone who has discovered the flaw may have been stealthily making use of it to compromise user accounts. Such attacks can be done stealthily without the user or app developer realizing what had happened, because the authentication app doesn't even have to be running.
Okay. Have the likes of Google and Apple and some of these banks that you speak about done anything to fix it, and have they addressed the issue?
As a responsible security research team, we have contacted Google and Apple quite a while ago, since the root cause of the flaw lies with the KeyStore and KeyChain. Google and Apple responded that they were ultimately not responsible for what users do to their phones. Mm-hmm. Apple, in particular, noted that this issue primarily affects jailbroken iPhones, which they could not be held liable for. This is essentially similar to the position that gun manufacturers have taken when dealing with gun-related deaths.
Yeah.
To us, we know that there are many phones that are rooted or jailbroken out there, and we have seen spyware tools being able to attain privilege escalation even on normal phones. Hence, we strongly believe that apps, especially financial or government ones, have to ensure that they continue to be secure, even if the underlying operating system or OS has been compromised. In fact, the trust gap flaw does not only affect authentication apps. It affects any app that has misplaced trust on the security of KeyStore or KeyChain.
Okay, Chiang Kai, I mean, surely this will have a tremendous impact on businesses and governments, you know, if this flaw is exposed.
Yes, indeed. There has been a general move towards using the mobile phone for two-factor authentication, or 2FA. People assume that it will be secure as long as they use 2FA. But only recently do people realize that not all 2FA are the same. SMS-based OTP has been in the news lately as an example of a weak 2FA that can be quite easily hacked. Now, with the trust gap flaw, many users of app-based 2FA will be caught by surprise when they discover that their accounts can be compromised too. Once user logins are compromised, hackers can proceed to do much more damage, as is as good as giving them access to everything belonging to the user accounts. For an organization, it may take only one user's compromised app to potentially hack an entire system.
So how will the end consumer be impacted?
Yes, end consumers will surely be impacted as well. Their accounts for accessing banking services, payments and government services can be compromised. This is highly possible as we know that many users use rooted and jailbroken phones and they indiscriminately install apps too.
Right. Okay, so what can businesses, government and the end user do to mitigate this?
The usual advice of not rooting or jailbreaking your phone still applies.
Right.
But with lots of spyware and malware that can attain privilege escalation these days, users will have to be extra careful about installing apps. I will also urge organizations that use apps that rely on key store and keychain to apply additional layers of security.
Mm-hmm. Now, how will this change the way that apps are developed? You know, will it?
The trust gap flaw demonstrates that app developers cannot simply trust that Keystore and Keychain will be able to fully protect keys. Mm. And this applies to apps that are using the Trusted Execution Environment, TEE, in general too. Developers will need to consider complementary technologies like Virtual Secure Element that can protect keys within the app and not be dependent on the underlying OS or hardware.
Mm.
Having multi-layered security is always the best way forward.
Right. So what can be done for us to trust these kinds of apps again?
Yes.
Based on our security analysis, a fundamental change in security architecture is needed. Ultimately, the best solution is to provide a means to securely identify each endpoint in the system, whether they be apps, TEE, servers or IoT devices. We need a virtual secure element that's bound to every app, which can serve as proof of an app's identity and integrity. The trust gap can then be breached, as any two endpoints will then be able to securely identify each other.
Mm.
Using such an architecture, the secure enclave in an iPhone will then be able to directly identify an app that's trying to access it, even if the OS has been compromised. If every app has a strong app identity, secure app-to-app communications will easily be achievable too. Imagine building an ecosystem of apps that can mutually trust one another in the most secure way. We believe that app identity will allow us to secure the global digital experience, not just for mobile, but also for the cloud and for IoT.
Right. Thank you for that, Chiang Kai. That was the CTO of VKey, a software-based digital security company based in Singapore, Chiang Kai.
You know, very interesting, he said the comment, right, about gun makers, right? It's not my fault, I made the gun.
Yeah.
It's the user's fault for using gun. I mean, you know, that argument.
No, I mean, thank you so much, Chiang Kai, you know, because he kind of really just simplified everything for us, which also kind of made it a little bit more scary for me, I have to say personally. But Frida, you have some stories to share.
Oh, I have phishing and vishing stories, right?
Just so that everyone is on the same page.
Yes.
Phishing is
online
scams that are done via email and vishing with a V are scams that are done via phone calls.
Right. So I'll do the phishing one first because the phishing one was when my Instagram account got hacked, right? And this was a message from someone who sent me a message on Facebook and said, hey, I've just done something. Could you pass me the code? And I innocently passed the code to that person. Boom, that person got onto my Instagram and it was a... So the thing is, the lesson learned, before I get into what happened, the lesson learned is that, you know, someone that doesn't normally, you know, it just seems like a suspicious message. And it wasn't someone that I spoke to all the time as well. And I've got a message from people who speak to me all the time sending me like that. And I will call them and say, you just sent me a message over Facebook. Oh, I've been hacked, right? So in that case, I didn't. After that, sort of like I wisened up. And it was just me battling to win back my Instagram account, right? Just like fighting. I put a two-step authentication code. You can see the person coming in with another code. And I was just fighting. This was like a Friday night 2 years ago. I still remember it very, very vividly. I won. I like to say, I you know, so, but I'm just saying it's not something to be proud of. It's just something that be very careful when you get these messages. A vishing one was something that happened to my friend. And it was like a call from the bank, right? the bank, right, and saying that, you know, oh, someone's, you open a credit, use your credit card in this branch, a bank of this branch. And then she says, but I don't have this account in this branch. So, oh, you know, you owe us 4,000 ringgit, da, da, da. And then the conversation went on, da, 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 da. And she lost 25,000 ringgit in the process.
Wow. From a 4,000 ringgit bill.
Bill. Then after that, like, you know, so you've got to sort this out because she gave out her code, her PIN. I don't know. The conversation was so good. You know, you gave out a PIN and they were taking out from several accounts, you know, from that PIN, right? Another friend got this again, and it was always the government, you know, saying you owe us how much money from income tax, everything. So she knew it was not real, but she just went on with the conversation and just for the heck of it. Trust me, when you get anything from the government that you owe them money, a red letter will arrive, right? A physical red letter will arrive. Look out for it. That's probably the genuine one.
Well, you also don't have to wait lah for that red letter.
You don't want to
pay your taxes or so lah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, we are asking you today if you or anyone you know have been a victim of an online scam. We would like some details if possible.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go through some of your messages and we will wrap up the show. But for now, here's some Tame Impala with Elephant. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes BFM 89.9.
Bluff Free Medium. BFM 89.9.
Boleh fikir mendalam. We are talking about online scams today. Have you or anyone you know been a victim of an online scam? You have a couple of minutes to get in touch with us. 018-789-8899 or at BFM Radio on Twitter. Tell us your horror stories.
Yeah. Don't be shy.
Yes. So Frida, we have a couple of messages to get through.
Yes, yes. We got one here from May. It said, yep, so I almost got fished. This is Vish. This is Vish. This is via phone call from LHDN saying my IC number has been used by this company who owes the government 35K. Yeah, that's a very familiar story. After much conversation, then I almost kena the macam scam. This happened sometime early this year. I went to make a police report right after. So there's one from May. And then here from 2016, I usually tell them, the banks, I'll call them back, then go to the official website to look for a general line and call them back to verify. But once I had an actual one, which I felt funny about because they kept calling me back, scammers don't usually do that. So I cross-checked the phone number against the website's branch locator and found that it was real. Apparently, an old auntie actually banked in 10,000 to my account and she went to a branch to beg for help, and the officer kasihan her and contacted me. I was supposed to fly to LA for family trip the next week, so I was wondering
whether it was a blessing.
No, whether he or she wanted to return the money.
Right.
I'm glad you did the right thing. I'm assuming you did the right thing. Okay, here we've got one from Rose. God lah, once I ordered a chendol on delivery, pay for it, and when I put my spoon in the bowl, only less than 10 of those small green worms.
That's a different kind of scam, bro.
Like that. Okay. Here one from Maggie Best. I did get a call from LHDN recently and I carried on the conversation, but I did the grilling on them. They hung out after a while. Now, would LHDN ever hang out if I owed them money? Anyway, I'm on the pay as I earn scheme. I just got refund for overpaying my tax, so I caught their bluff. However, experience that convinced me even more to stick to conventional monetary transactions as much as possible and for as long as I can hold out against the digital tsunami. I know what you mean, Maggie. I feel you as well. I got this... So this is one here from Miss Go. It said a friend forwarded this to me, this whole thing, right? And things like this makes online scamming so much convenient. So there, you know, there's this data price. There's a whole way of how you can do this. So thank you for your feedback, guys.
Yes. Now, we also have some messages over here on Twitter. One here from Imran who says...
Yes, selling fake goods. And when you complain, they ask you to retract and they'll refund the money only if you retract. Then there are those who supply different items of what you ordered and refuse to respond. That one's kind of...
Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about here, Imran, because sometimes when you order one thing and then something else...
It turns up.
And then you have to then go through all the trouble to return it and postage and this and that. And then you feel like, it's okay, I'll just leave it. But, you know, that's how they end up making the money, right? And we have one final one here to read from a very familiar Jeff Sandu.
So as a former tech maestro, I've nearly been scammed myself. They're getting really good and sometimes getting access to my credit card details without even me knowing. I've cancelled 3 credit cards in the last 5 years.
Oh,
he's got a crying emoji. And I have seen Jeff crying by his desk.
because of this over the last 5 years. He could have been here.
Only kidding, Jeff.
Yeah, and you'll always be a tech maestro, Jeff, you know. You'll always be our tech maestro. Yeah, so it's time to... Oh, we've got one more message.
We've got a few more here. Okay, oh, everybody on a... oh, okay, so this is Chow Yang. He talked about... I do not agree with the analogy to gun makers, though. I would think the proper analogy would be like buying a car. If the car buyer modifies the car into an armored assault vehicle to inflict harm, is it the car manufacturer's responsibility? A gun's purpose is to inflict harm. There are no other ways to interpret the usage of a gun than to inflict harm. A car's purpose is for transport. But I do agree that as a smart device user, multiple layers of security is required, and keeping up to date on the latest tricks that scammers have to be vigilant, right?
Definitely.
There's another one here from Lok Kok Yen said, the biggest scam I got was from KFC. This is supposed to be a drumstick, a whole two new... Okay, he sends us a picture. It's lunchtime. We're hungry. May goes and said, was glad that my daughter returned 800 ringgit back to the owner. So glad.
Right. Mm. Well, thank you so much for chiming in and, you know, sharing your horror stories with us. Of course, today we were talking about phishing and vishing scams and how they are they work across the board. You know, it's not just those who are perceived to be older and less tech savvy. Even those more Generation Zs are falling to online scams as well. If you missed out on any part of
final
this
score,
show, we haven't wrapped up the final score.
So. Yes, someone I know has been a victim of online scam at 32.5%. Yes, I have at 26.3%. So that's over 50% who has been, you know, who have been scammed. No, but almost was 23.8%. And no, I haven't at 17.5%.
Right. If you missed out on any part of this show, you can go look for the podcast on our website. That's bfm.my. You can also find all our podcasts on the BFM app. That's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. Frida and myself will be back again same time tomorrow for more on Enterprise Biz Bytes. But till then, taking us out of the show today, it's The Cardigans with Erase Rewind. Thank you for joining us on Enterprise Biz Bytes BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.